3. And you're in the last half hour of the show. Call-in number is 427-3772.
We had Judge Pacow.
Attic. We disqualified Attic.
Well, that might have been a mistake. I'm going to tell you something. Judge Attic today, you know I'm the most obnoxious person that these judges ever have to deal with.
And this is Richard Quigley speaking.
And but his patience for me today was it seemed unyielding. He did not get angry with me.
He is thrilled to be back in civil court. He hated criminal court.
Well, he treated me absolutely mind-blowingly correct today, and it threw me off. I mean, I just
Richard has a following of a bunch of attorneys who actually sit in on all of his hearings because not being an officer of the court, he can say all of these things that we can't say, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where one day a DA was spouting off about one thing or another, going on and on and on, and when he finally finished, Quigley said to I think it was Judge Danner, I forget who it was. He says, "Judge, you're not going to listen to all those lies from that weasel, are you?
Oh, no.
Are you not going to listen to that lying weasel, are you?" And all the public defenders are going, yeah.
My last time in front of Danner, I walked into the court, and a couple weeks ago, they'd asked me what I wanted to do. It was right after I had some problems with the court, so I was a little bit off balance, and I walked in, and I said, "Why would you bother to ask me that? And what difference does it make to you? It's whatever the prosecutor wants. Obviously, I'm just his chattels. Whatever he says goes, never mind the law. So why would you ask me that?" So, of course, he put everything back because I wasn't in a mood to be dealt with. So last Friday, I walked in there, and for our hearing, rescheduled the second time. I've 25 appearances on a fix-it ticket, and I still haven't entered a plea. You got it? Okay, still not having entered a plea. Anyway, I walked in there. And he starts looking around, and I says, "Well, I got the answer for you, Judge." And, of course, he says, "Well, to what?" And I said, "That question you asked me a couple weeks ago, I didn't have the answer for you." And he says, "Well, what question was that?" I said, "You asked me what I wanted to do now." And he said, well, what's your answer?" I said, "I want to move for a motion to recuse that little son of a bitch over there." Pointing at the DA. And without, I mean, not even a flinch, not even a hint of being the least bit bothered by the comment, he kind of sits there and says, "Well, for what reason?" I said,
and actually that was Richard Quigley and Attorney Kate Wells a couple weeks back when Judge Acow unfortunately threw out our concern that the mayor's aides lawsuit against us, their injunction, was a slap suit. On a line with us, I have Attorney Kate Wells herself, dragged out of a pleasant evening where she's just trying to relax after having done endless hours of work.
And still working.
And is still working, for all of you who think you can go home and relax. Kate, you want to talk about any civil rights cases you're working on that you think that would be of interest to Free Radio Santa Cruz people?
I don't know exactly what you've been talking about, so I don't want to go over.
No, we haven't been talking about much of anything.
Ouch. I have kind of a newish case where some people, including the Santa Cruz PD and a landlord in the Beach Flats area, basically threatened to have my client arrested after he paid his rent and first and last month's rent and had a year's lease. Happens to be a Russian person who speaks very broken English, and when the officer arrived and threatened to take him to jail, it of course had meaning to him that it, although it's starting to have that same meaning to all of us, obviously coming from Russia, it was a pretty frightening thing. Even though he showed the officer the receipt, the officer held the receipt and informed him that he wouldn't get the receipt back unless he agreed to leave. So I just filed a claim over that against the city.
Mm-hmm.
I
mentioned that you filed a claim about the David Silva matter last summer.
Yes.
That was a...
They've denied the claim, and we'll be filing the lawsuit soon.
This is
you just talked to Quigley?
You know, I just actually played the tape that
you
made that day, or part of it, and it was mostly off point because I was referring instead to the upcoming Fitzmaurice subpoena hearing. Maybe a couple of brief comments from you on that subpoena. I know you wrote a brief opposing the city attorney's attempt to make sure that the mayor doesn't have to show up in court.
Well, yeah, and the basis for our contention is this, and that is that this is all a ruse, basically. This Anna Brooks thing is, you know, it's our contention that what happened is that Tim Fitzmaurice became very tired of hearing your message, and perhaps he has some, you know, small bit of conscience somewhere and may have some guilt feelings about the fact that the homeless can't sleep at night without fear of being arrested, and that he couldn't find any real legal way of getting rid of you, any manner that wouldn't at the least violate your constitutional rights, and he certainly didn't want to involve himself in this process. So he corralled Anna Brooks to do his dirty work for him. And, of course, taxpayers are still paying for all of this from her standpoint and from his standpoint.
How much do you estimate it's cost so far for the taxpayers?
I would say, you know, I'm not even sure exactly what city attorney charges them per hour. It would be an interesting thing to find out. But I would think that they probably have at least, maybe 75 hours into the case. That wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. And that's $100 an hour is.
Oh well, that's minimal.
Mm-hmm.
That's so minimal.
Maybe $200 an hour.
Very possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're talking between $10,000 and $20,000. Not counting court fees, not counting other things.
Well, of course, they don't have to pay the court fees.
But that's what the taxpayer eventually will be paying for all this.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an outrage. It's an outrage. And I don't know how anyone could possibly justify what they're doing, you know. I mean, we're living in a police state. Somebody mentioned to me just today, as a matter of fact, that they went up to San Francisco and they spent the whole day tooling around on their little motorized scooters all day, and that the entire day they maybe saw a total of 3 cops. Never got hassled once. Never had any problems whatsoever. And came back to Santa Cruz and just saw the presence everywhere. You know, just it's. I'm surprised that some enterprising civil rights attorney from San Francisco hasn't seen what a gold mine Santa Cruz is.
Well, it's in fact, you're kind of one of the rare local attorneys who has been willing to challenge the city council. I know you've not only taken David Silva's case, but you've taken my case, the case of the, you know, stands in the back of the room and makes a yak-yak sound and gets arrested for it. Or
well, I'd say for the past 10 years I have steadily had an action all the time, at least one action going against the city for either violation of someone's civil rights by the cops or, you know, by the council. So, yeah, it's been but I paid dearly for it too.
Well, you recently had your cannabis pharmaceuticals, which served 600 to 1,000 people, mm-hmm. essentially, in spite of attempts to get it to 2 different locations.
Right.
It's essentially dissolved, and these people are on the streets looking for their medication. Is that still the case?
That is still the case, and I have it on very good authority. And this is horse's mouth kind of stuff. that this is a payback to me. That if I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna sue the city, I'm gonna have to take the consequences. And the problem is, it's not me taking the consequences. It's 600 to 1,000. Sick and dying people.
Mm-hmm. They could have, of course, declared a medical emergency, as was done up north.
Yeah.
And certainly the climate is sympathetic for it. You know, the DA's office would have responded to it. Why didn't they do that, Kate?
I really don't know what they did by passing this confounded ordinance that they passed, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. No one can comply with it. I guess it seems to me that it was all just window dressing, that they had no intention of accommodating sick and dying people who use marijuana as medicine. No intention. And, you know, there's only one person that I can think of that would be behind something like that.
And who would that be?
That would be Chief Belcher.
Chief Belcher? Are you accusing our police department of getting its fingers dirty with politics?
Well, I'm sorry. It you know, I can't think of any other reason. I mean, certainly, you know, Mike Rotkin, for instance, is a big proponent of legalizing marijuana.
But he wouldn't put it on the agenda for you to discuss.
That's right. Now why?
Did he ever call you back and tell you why?
No.
Did you ever call him?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what about Valerie Corral and her WHAM organization, which I understand is continuing to operate even though it's illegal and should be allowed to operate just as yours should, but there wasn't much support given by that organization for yours, right?
No, and, you know, I don't want to get in a pissing match about WHAM, but they have been granted a favored nation status, you know, by the powers that be. They are untouchable, and some of that has to do with the fact that they've tried to prosecute her twice, and twice they have failed.
The city attorney has, or the DA? Or?
The DA.
Mm-hmm. So she has a good track record. Have they successfully prosecuted you or any of your clients in terms of your operation?
Not that I'm aware.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that she may be untouchable, but unfortunately she doesn't have unlimited resources, so if she could, in fact, take in all your clients, that might be great, but she can't do that, right?
No, they have a limited number of people that they can service, being a cooperative. Basically, I'm using someone else's phrase here, but I think it's a good one, and that is that literally it's the only club that people are dying to get into.
That's right. Getting back to the Fitzmaurice subpoena hearing, which is coming up next Thursday morning at, I guess, 8:30 in Department 6?
That's correct.
You wrote a brief on this issue, which, how is the mayor trying to avoid service, and why is he trying to avoid it? What's the point there?
He's contending that the only reason he's being called is that we want to ask him embarrassing questions, political questions, and probe his mind as to the sleeping ban and all of these other things, that's our purpose in calling him. And of course, my response to that was, well, you know, if in fact we do ask an inappropriate question, the appropriate response is objection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let the judge decide. I mean, that's certainly not a reason not to call him.
Mm-hmm.
He's also saying that sure, he witnessed some of what went on, but sure, lots of other people did too. And he's an important man with all of these duties that he has to do, and therefore he shouldn't be the one to have to go and testify.
Well, I don't wish to detract from the mayor's, legitimate importance, although I'm not quite sure what that is at this particular stage, given his lack of action on key issues ranging from rent control to medical marijuana to the sleeping ban. I'm not quite sure what issues he has acted on. Maybe he supported the protests against the Free Trade Association of the Americas or something, and I'm always, you know, all
right, but, I mean,
pleased
he's
about that.
To work on local issues, and I'm sorry, that's, I don't know what he's done either.
Well, what about another brief that you worked on recently was the James Ney brief. He's a homeless activist who was arrested for writing slogans about ending the sleeping ban on the Pacific Avenue sidewalk near a table for a sleeping ban, I guess, petitioning. What's happened with that?
Well, basically we are opposing the entire action by declaring it to be unconstitutional, both on its face, the law, and as it's applied.
You know that there has been a rash of police actions against chalkers in the last month, that I've talked to people who've had 6 tickets written for chalking, even with washable chalk on the sidewalk, that they are now doing this as a matter of course, and I, in fact, interviewed officers Azua and Gunther in an interview that was played last week or last show, in which they said, well, that doesn't matter. It's still a form of defacing the sidewalk. So you may be facing a renewed policy, which they are determined to enforce.
Well, you know, if you look at the actual penal code section that talks about vandalism, which has to do with defacing property, they quite clearly describe the tools of vandalism. And one of the tools, of course, would be a felt tip marker, and they make it quite clear that they describe the felt tip marker, and it has to be something that's not water soluble.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using that to as an analogy to say that obviously something that just washes away. I mean, the law as it's stated right now, if you went down the sidewalk and you scuffed along the sidewalk with your shoes, you could be cited. If some little kid spills their blueberry sundae on the pavement, something that would stain the pavement, you could be cited.
Is this a state law or a city law?
No, this is an ordinance. This isn't a defacing the public property kind of ordinance.
A city law?
It's an ordinance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Uh-huh. And you know, if you pulled your car a little too close and your tire made a mark on the curb. You know, and the law is written to include all of those things. So we're saying the law is overly broad. And then we're also saying that as it applies to his conduct and the fact that you're telling me that they're citing people in general now could be a direct result of this case. And I'm sorry to hear that that's the result they're taking.
You mean the fact that you are challenging the
that's
law
right.
through the saying that James Nay's behavior in writing, I don't know, the sleeping ban violates human rights or whatever he wrote, is in fact protected First Amendment speech, and that his arrest was unconstitutional or, should we say, illegal or...
Right, and now they're trying to prove that they do that to everybody.
Another question I have for you is, it's my understanding that infractions, that is to say, violations of a city code which is not a misdemeanor, is lower than a misdemeanor, are not normally the basis for a custodial arrest. That is, there has to be some other misdemeanor offense attached, or maybe an inability to be able to prove who you are if the officer believes you're trying to evade justice. Am I accurate in saying that you cannot normally make a custodial arrest in an infraction case?
Normally not. There's an exception, however, in the law for activities that it is where it is in fact clear that they
likely to continue.
Continue.
Right. Interesting. I'd like to get that code section. I know that you've been rushing to get these briefs filed. I guess a week or two ago you got the Steve Argue sell a newspaper get knocked to the ground case from 1998 into federal court. I know you're going to be rushing to get my case, bring a porta potty into city council for a satirical skit, get arrested. That'll be another one of your, I'm sure, big hits.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, of course, take me to a magistrate, which you've been very successful in getting around the county. I guess you got the sheriff's department.
And the city.
And the city to agree that they're now appointing someone at the jail to be ready at all hours to be able to, in essence, address an issue if you're arrested on a vehicle code violation and you want to see a magistrate immediately, correct?
That's correct, and they're also arranging so that during court hours you can actually go straight to a magistrate.
Has anyone actually done this yet?
No. As far as I know, what's happened is that they have, so far the city has informed all of their police officers that that is to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's happened already. The settlement agreement hasn't been signed yet. But I know they are already working on it, and I know that the county is working to implement that with to have a magistrate available during court hours so that they can hear your case, so that that basically they can determine whether or not there was probable cause on the spot
mm-hmm.
for the arrest in the first place.
Attorney Larry Hildes has taken the case of James Costner, accused of, shall we say, beautifying the Columbus statue, releasing the spirit of Columbus into the population by unchaining him from his granite surroundings, if you will, letting him free, in other words, smashing the statue with a sledgehammer. You have been in cases involving James Costner in the past. I believe you were in the city council lockdown case in 1996.
Right. I didn't represent James. I represented three other defendants.
But you were present at that trial. You regard Costner as a violent and dangerous individual who
absolutely
is some sort of
not unbalanced
person?
Absolutely not. No, I consider him to be a passionate person. And he believes in his... he gentle person. Mm-hmm. Very gentle person.
Anything else that has come up recently that I know, and I know we're taking time away from your latest brief that you're probably working on now, that you think we should know about, just to be aware of, that you're working on?
No, I guess I would ask of the listeners is that they be good citizens and be aware and report things and complain and be good witnesses when they see. Don't run away when you see a cop stop somebody. Stay there, listen, and do what you can to let them know that we're not just going to lay down and let them run over us.
You know, one thing I wanted to bring up is that your client, Steve Argue, of course, was one of the celebrated cases as part of the Yugoslavian bombing in another incident where he was, he served 7 months in jail for punching a police officer. David Lefebvre has since left the force, and apparently under a cloud, because the independent investigation found that Lefebvre had used excessive force against the mother and the child that Steve was defending. What's interesting is that complaint, which came back to us 2 months ago and to the Citizens Police Review Board, has disappeared into the bowels of the police department and has not yet emerged. Any comments on that?
Imagine my surprise.
Well, a very cynical attitude for an attorney of your standing. No wonder they don't like you at City Hall.
Oh, my. Well, you know what? I will say this. I think that probably by far the vast majority of sheriffs and city, I could probably exclude Capitola,
yeah,
are very good officers and really try very hard to follow the law. And you know what? They hate the bad cops, too. And it's really too bad because they give a bad name to all of the cops. There are some good cops and a lot of good cops, and they have a rough job. They do a good job at what they're doing. It's just too bad that we can't be more selective in our hiring and more competent in our training. I do want to say one thing that's going to be coming up here, and I don't know if Quigley's gotten in touch with you yet about this, but we all think it's pretty much an outrage that the Sheriff's Department is paying so little to the deputies. When in fact Tracy has been getting his raises regularly and is paid an extraordinary salary of that's I think probably close to $100,000. And what's happened is that with the cost of living here and the income for the sheriffs, we're like top in cost of living and bottom in what we pay our sheriffs. The good guys are leaving, and they're leaving because they can. And what's left? The ones that can't. The ones that can't go anywhere else because they have blots on their record or whatever. I think that and plus it's just attracting competent people. You know, who's going to come here to work here when they're not getting paid enough? So we are thinking that we're going to try to start a petition on behalf of the sheriff's officers to we thought that might be kind of an interesting thing to do, to set up a table in front of the the courthouse.
That'll confuse them.
To gather signatures and it would expose the fact that, look at here, you know, the top dog is getting his, so he's, you know, and he's not taking care of the rank and file.
Listen, Attorney Kate Wells, I want to thank you for being with us. And, hey, I know it's evening time, so get back to work and help those human rights violations end now.
Well, it's all of our work, you know. It's everybody has to work. Everybody's got to take part, you know. It's not like this everywhere. That's what I think we need to know, you know. I mean, my son's in Arizona now, and he says it is an entirely different atmosphere there. People are vigilant about their rights, and they stand up for their rights, you know, here. You know, people just lay down and let them trample, and we've got to put our foot down and stop.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Kate.
All right. Bye.
And that was Attorney Kate Wells. This has been Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz. Next show, Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. Then you can rage against rent in the afternoon at 1 o'clock with Scan, Fitzmaurice, and hopefully some other folks as well who want real rent control and some real affordable housing and not just a little setup program for a favored housing provider. If you want to catch me in between times, 423-HUFF is the number to call, 423-4833. City Council has a meeting on Tuesday. I'll be going into that at the next meeting if I can. The City Clerk's Office did not have the agendas available this evening. So thank you for being with me. We're going to go out on a special tape, actually the same one we went in on the Edge, by Ewan McCall and Charlie Parker and Peggy Seeger as our next broadcaster. Let's be specific about who he is. You'll love him. His name starts with a D. Yes, it's Uncle Dennis coming at you with Earth First. Thanks for being with me. Come back again on Sunday.
What is it like, the world outside, world beyond the wall? Does it compare with all the tales they tell? What is real and what are dreams in that world where nothing is what it seems? Who can advise me? Can I use the lessons learned that outside the wall? Can I walk through fire and not be burned on the way? How can I make that world my own and fight the fear when I'm alone? Instruct me. You, the two who gave me breath, you who fashioned me, you who clothed me with your flesh and bone, you fed and sheltered me, open the door and set me free. Now you can help me.
I want to break away. When you're born, your mother thinks, oh, he's going to be a great lad. You're cast, you're moulded, and that's where you're going to be. But if you break away, you're regarded as strange. And as a beatnik or something.
You shouldn't go out with boys, you're too young.
You're not going. I am going. You're not. I am going.
You're not old enough. You don't do this. Where have you been? What have you been doing? Where you were?
I think you're born to die. You know, you just eat, sleep, drink and die. And that's it. That is their happy life.
The tale of the children of the troubled world. The tale of the search and the long journey. Each one awaits the word of comfort. The simple gesture of recognition from those who once made the same journey.
I find it very difficult to talk to my parents.
I have no trouble with my dad because he's on nights. He's been on nights for 6 years.
We're going to get back to that a little later. You've been listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, presented